I'm Chris.
And I'm Kylie. And this is Redefining Resilience,
where we explore what it means to build a resilient lifestyle
so you can thrive in any and every situation.
All right. So today we're going to be talking about reality testing. Neat little concept that piggybacks off of the last episode. Where are we in the domains here, Kylie?
Still in composure. And just a refresher, composure is your ability to stay calm and in control when facing stress or adversity. It helps us recognize and understand emotional reactions and allows us to respond quickly so that we can regain our composure. So, Chris, what is reality testing?
So I did a lot of digging on reality testing. I know that we've gone through some training that gives us some guidance on reality testing, but I wanted to figure out where it came from, who, quote unquote, started it. I'm a huge fan of figuring out the beginning of things so I can figure out how it turned into what it is now. And doing this little bit of research here, I found out that it was first introduced by Sigmund Freud. He stated, reality testing allows the ego to distinguish between fears, beliefs, hopes, and actual reality.
I like that.
Another definition I found that was, I thought, pretty great. Any means by which an individual determines and assesses their limitations in the face of biological, psychological, social, or environmental actualities or urgent need or demand. It enables the individual to distinguish between self and non-self and between fantasy and real life.
Okay, so in a nutshell, it's our ability to tell what's real, what's not.
Exactly. Since emotions are powerful, they are helping us stay away from potential pain or injury by producing a fake reality in the future that we're worried about.
Well, couple things to know about our brain is that if our brain does not have enough information, it's going to fill in the gaps with our best guesses. So that's why we need to reality test, because a lot of times your brain has already gone to a worst case scenario is the default of how our brain fills in missing pieces of information. It goes to worst case scenario because it's always looking to protect us. And so it goes to worst case scenario so that you can be prepared for the worst possible outcome. So if we're constantly filling in gaps, we have to be careful that we don't always fill it in with negative assumptions.
So that's why it's really important to expand our friendship base, our knowledge base, read books outside of our normal repertoire, talk to people that are different, experience different things. The mind views the unknown as a fear, that it will fill in the gap with fear and anxiety to protect you. But the more you know, the more people you associate with, the more experiences you have, the more your brain has to go back on to fill in the gaps with things it's more comfortable with. It understands more and has a bigger basis to draw from.
So the more well-rounded or experience you have, you start to build out a bigger menu of options that your brain chooses from to select and fill in the details with, if that makes sense.
Yeah. A website I found called OKA Online describes reality testing as the ability and tendency for you to be able to assess the here and now reality of any given moment or situation and compare that to your fantasy of what is going on, thus avoiding being overcome by fantasies, daydreams, or biases.
And another concept related to the brain that's important to understand, your brain doesn't know the difference between something that is real and something you imagine. So if you're imagining a scenario, you're still going to feel the emotions as if it's real. So perfect example. If you watch the documentary Free Solo.
Phenomenal documentary.
There's a rock climber, Alex, who holds the world record for climbing up the tallest mountain with no harness, no ropes, nothing. And I'm literally sweating just even thinking about him scaling that mountain. My brain has no idea that I'm not actually climbing that mountain. My brain is watching Alex climb that mountain and I'm sweating because I feel like I'm nervous. I'm scared. I'm in this place where I should be very afraid because I'm having empathetic feelings for him. Right. So the danger in that is if we are constantly making up stories in our head and our brain doesn't know that these stories aren't real, our brain thinks that we're going through whatever we've concocted in our head, and you're going to have all the emotions associated with that. So let's say you've got a kid in college and you text your kid at like 9 p.m. and say, hey, I'm going to bed. Like, text me when you get home so I don't have to worry about you at this party. And let's say you wake up and there's no text message from your kid. You're automatically probably assuming, oh my gosh, my child is in a ditch somewhere. I never got a text. I'm scared to death. You're imagining feelings of losing a child without actually having lost a child. And that's a dramatic example, I know.
It is a dramatic example, but it's real. I mean, there are several other really easily consumed concepts for reality testing. One is social media. Social media is the biggest example of fear-driven decision-making, FOMO. I see all these things happening that aren't reality. I know countless people that take pictures of their family or themselves, and it looks perfect around them. But if the camera panned 2 feet in either direction, it'd be fucking chaos. The house is destroyed. Things are falling apart. Something's on fire. It just looks like havoc, right? But in the social media picture with all the filters and the being able to use AI and block things out and change things around, you're fed a fake version of reality that your mind cannot figure out. It just sees my friend is now doing this and oh shit, I'm still here. And you feel the gap in between. But once you realize the gap in between is how social media makes their money and makes their presence known and keeps you fiending for it, you understand how they're just playing off the brain, off of what we're talking about. So yeah. It's not really that you're missing out. It's that you've been tricked to think you are all the time.
Well, and then we become guided by a fantasy world that doesn't even exist. We start thinking, oh, I need this thing like that influencer on social media. And it's a slippery slope because we start to think that these things are normal. It's not normal to have somebody videoing you all the live long day or to be doing everything with a ring light set up in front of you. Like, I don't cook my meals with a ring light. The people on social media posting videos of recipes cook all their videos with a ring light. That's not normal.
All right. So before we dig into reality testing, Kylie, tell us what reality is.
I think of reality as what I am actually experiencing. Something that I can either hold or see or feel or smell, right? It's something that engages my senses in a way that is actual. And you think about it, like an example would be social media is not reality, right? So if I'm thinking that social media is an example of things that are going on around me, it's false because I can't actually go meet those people that I see on the internet always. And I've also experienced a whole lot of people that post stuff on social media that is so far from what's going on behind the scenes in real life. You know, someone, you have a beautiful family photo posted on your social media, your Instagram, right? But 5 minutes prior to that photo, you had kids crying and fighting in the background, and we happen to get this one magical photo of everybody smiling and looking at the camera, when in reality, it was absolute hell to probably wrangle children and your spouse and the dog and get them all to sit quietly in this photo. Like, it's just not reality. But we've gotten accustomed to believing that the things we see on social media are reality. And now, even more than ever, because AI exists, we have to start discerning between what's real in real life, like what we can actually physically see, touch, feel, versus what's out there for us to maybe consider.
So I think my view of reality is the difference between what I want and what's actually happening. What I want is $1 million a year job.
I think people also can think of things that aren't reality that they don't want.
True, right? So positive or negative, the things that could be happening are not my reality. The things that are currently happening are my reality. So when we talk about reality testing, we'll get into that a little bit deeper. It's comparing what we're thinking might happen to what's actually happening.
I think one example we can all relate to is when COVID first happened, there were a lot of different versions of reality. And based on your experience, your real life, you know, one thing that I constantly kept reminding myself when COVID hit was, okay, what's going on around me? I have to be vigilant and observe what's happening around me. Are people around me, you know, dying from COVID? I personally did not know anyone that died from COVID, luckily. Are people getting sick? Yes. Are people losing their sense of taste and smell? Yes. Right? So I'm now buying into a reality that I'm investigating for myself and discerning for myself and asking a lot of questions. So as COVID was happening, I'm asking people a lot of questions to get a better understanding of what are actual statistics that I can gather information on for myself so I can determine how serious I need to take this.
Yeah, you took it upon yourself to collect the data and not just do what you were told. The biggest issue with reality testing is we tend to do things like sheep because it's very simple and easy and feels good to be part of the group. The problem with being part of the group is not always right. I tend to, and have always done this, if I see a group of people doing something, I automatically assume that they're being misled and I need to question it.
On the skeptical side.
I'm very skeptical because I've seen multiple groups, quote unquote, of great high thinkers end up in just horrible situations. I mean, we look at our government right now and it's like, we're in bad shape. No matter what side you stand on, we're in bad shape because we've sheepishly just allowed things to happen. So I think that this concept is a lot bigger than just what we're talking about. This affects everything. What is actually happening in our life to us currently, and what could possibly happen, bad or good, in the future? How do we compare the two and figure out what is the most beneficial action?
Another example, when I started reflecting on my relationship with alcohol about 3 years ago, I had to ask myself, like, how did I get to this point where I'm living for the weekends, drinking all the time on the weekends, and I had to go back and reality test my own experience with alcohol? Well, I go back to, was I around it as a kid? Yes. I go back to, was I around it in college? I couldn't tell you one person that didn't drink at IU when I went to college there. I had to go back and say, okay, what about my environment led me to thinking that this reality was, quote, normal? Because you're right, we tend to blindly just follow things that we see without discerning or questioning them. And when I started to dig into it and I started to just test my relationship with alcohol, I stopped drinking and just decided I'll see how long I can go. I started finding material and researching things that aligned with not drinking. And now all of a sudden, my reality has just totally shifted because I'm asking for information that goes against my current beliefs. And we talked about how important beliefs are in previous episodes. And it's a real thing. We look for reality that confirms our current beliefs. I felt like alcohol was not a bad thing for me. So I found a reality that affirmed that, hey, everybody's doing it, so it's fine. It's not a bad thing. But then when I looked for supporting evidence to help me consider the opposite perspective, I found that also. So keep in mind that reality testing is something that you have to actively do. It's not necessarily a common sense kind of thing because we're fed so much misinformation all the time. And it's based on an algorithm by which you're feeding it information, right? I was looking for the funny memes that joked about drinking wine on the weekends and blacking out and not remembering things and oops, haha.
So it's not necessarily that we have this big evil system that's trying to keep you down. It's that it is a mathematical algorithm that's trying to feed you things that you're looking for.
Yep.
It's just farming as fast and as hard as it can to keep giving you things. Just like your brain is firing and farming as fast as it can to validate what you're telling it.
Yep.
So this concept, the brain's going to work as hard as it can to pick the possible closest scenario to its reality, what it's experienced, to prepare you for a potential outcome. So if it's going to be something you've never experienced, then, or you weren't ready for, then it's probably going to pick the most, the one it has to prepare the most for, the scariest one, which would be a negative outcome. So your limbic system is going to take over. We've discussed the limbic brain countless times now in several episodes. But understanding that that's what's taking over and that's what's feeding this negative outcome gives you a little bit of clarity on why you get an email from your boss that says, we need to talk, and all of a sudden your hands start sweating. Well, do you know your boss? Probably. Are you in good standings with your boss? Probably. If you have a great relationship with your boss, you're doing your job, you're ahead of the bar, like you're doing things great, why the hell are your hands sweating? Your hands are sweating because it's a normal impulse for your brain to assume the worst to protect you. Because worst case scenario would be your boss says, we need to talk. Oh, by the way, you're in trouble or you're fired.
Right.
So your mind automatically goes there.
So an exercise we can do to overcome maybe some of the anxiety feelings that may surface when you get that dreaded, hey, we need to talk message, or you start feeling anxious about an unknown outcome that you're thinking is worst case scenario, go through an exercise where obviously you think of the worst case scenario. Our brain is going to have no trouble doing that. But what we don't tend to do is think about the best case scenario. We actively have to look for the best case scenario. And then third is most likely scenario, which is typically somewhere in between.
We hardly ever land in worst and best. We usually land in the middle.
So let's say, for example, you've got your business owner, Chris, and you've got an employee who has been feeling very overwhelmed and stressed out, and work performance is maybe a little poor right now. And they've got some family issues going on behind the scenes, and you're dreading having a conversation with them. Because if you put yourself in this scenario, Chris, what's the worst case scenario that's going to happen from having a conversation about poor performance with this employee who's mentally unstable?
Well, there's a lot of bad situations that, or scenarios, but they lose their mind and I end up losing mine and then we end up screaming at each other.
Okay, so that's a worst case scenario. Now, if you think about a best case scenario, what might that look like?
I bring up something that allows them to feel vulnerable and respected, and they take a little time off and come back killing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gives them time to be open and honest about their needs. Yeah. And we can accommodate.
And a most likely scenario, if you think about what's most likely.
They're going to say, oh man, I wasn't thinking, or I'm busy. I've got something on my brain. I'll ship up and ship out, excuse me. Yeah. I'll restate that. Most likely scenario.
Yeah.
I'll shape up or ship out.
And I can tell you, because this is very similar to an actual scenario that I coached a client on. This individual agreed with all the feedback and then said, I need to go get help and prioritize my mental health and go do that.
Yeah. You open the door for communication, because at the end of the day, this is part of how this stuff falls apart, is lack of communication. If I'm not talking to the people that work for us, if you and I are not talking in this relationship and something happens, our brain, without the knowledge of the communication in between the days and the actions and the things that are happening in our world, our reality, our brain is going to take leaps to try to fill those gaps in. And to protect us from potential pain, it's going to go worst case scenario. She's pissed at me. She hates me. She wants to leave me. This is horrible. She can't stand me. As opposed to, I'm just having a really hard time right now. And she's there for me and wants to help, but I failed in communicating my need. So a lot of that is also control. Like, I want to control my reality. So whenever I am presented with a situation I don't understand, it's easier for me to put the potential outcome in place so then I can control it. Mm-hmm. It's my attempt to control the future that I don't understand. The issue is we get the possibility and probability skewed. Is it possible that my boss is going to fire me? Yeah, because life happens. Things change. I lost a job with a boss that I think is fantastic. We both were really, really good friends, but something happened with his business partner and the company pretty much shut down, totally out of his control. So I don't think that, yeah, possibility versus probability. Is it possible that I'm going to lose my job? Yeah. Is it probable? Probably not.
Yeah.
Like, is it probable it's going to be worst case scenario? No. Possible, maybe. But.
Well, and trust me, if you're in a bad work environment, I actually had this exact scenario happen to me. And I'll tell you, I did get fired, but I was happy to get fired because it was a horrible work environment. I knew it was coming. It was not a surprise to me because I was not a fit for that shit show of a culture. Like, I was way too structured. I want organization. And I didn't fit. I didn't fit inside the chaos. And I was perfectly okay with that.
Yeah.
Right. So even if you are experiencing a worst case scenario, most likely it's not going to sneak up on you. It's not going to be from left field. Sometimes those things do happen to us. But again, we have to go back to probability and possibility. Is it a possibility? Sure. Is it probable? No.
That's my favorite question to ask myself whenever I start getting kind of worked up. You know, say before a competition, it's like, well, fuck, what if I get hurt? You know, what if this happens? What if that happens? It's like, all right, bud, is it possible? 100%. I'm putting myself in harm's way here. Is it probable? No, it's just not. I know what I'm doing.
Well, and that's where planning and prevention comes into play. And you can think about, okay, let's say, for example, you're thinking about getting hurt and you're worried about getting hurt before a competition. Well, that's why you get the extra insurance that they offer. They have a one-day health insurance policy that you can pay an extra $30 for, and that's why you add that on, right? So you're prepared and you're planned out, and no matter what happens, even if you hurt yourself, no worries, you've got it covered.
That's where the personal responsibility stint comes in. You have to take care of yourself. So prepare as much as you can, and then ask yourself the probability versus possibility scenario.
Well, and if you think about it, we've been conditioned since a very young age to misconstrue these concepts with phrases like, okay, don't jump too many times on the diving board because you're going to slip and break your head open. Or don't run with scissors, you're going to poke your eye out.
My two favorite ones are don't sit too close to the TV because your eyes will burn. Or don't cross your eyes, they'll get stuck like that.
Don't speak if you have something, unless you have something nice to say. Yeah. Right? We are going with all of these phrases. They're preventing worst case scenarios. Highly unlikely. Worst case.
Some of them are completely irrational and not even possible.
Right.
I could hold my eyes crossed all fucking day. They're not going to get stuck. They can't get stuck like that. The minute you go to sleep, they're going to go back normal. Now, we've been conditioned, like you said, to prepare for worst case scenario. So in our formative years, was that years 1 through 8?
Yep.
We're told this how many thousands of times. Don't touch the stove because it's hot. 100% down with that. That's an immediate reaction. You know, yeah. That is a real thing. The stove is hot. Don't sit too close to the TV because your eyes will burn. You're creating a pathway and a process for a child to rationalize the unknown. And it's worst case scenario.
Yep.
So you can't be surprised when that child grows up and gets a call from his boss. He automatically thinks, oh, fuck, I'm going to get fired. Because he still thinks if he sits too close to the television, his eyes are going to burn.
So with this reality testing tool, it helps us sort out what's imagined in our brain from actual reality. Gives us a better understanding of what's likely to happen, what could possibly happen, worst case scenarios, and then we can plan and act accordingly.
This concept's great because it gives you a lot of tools to utilize in just your everyday conversations. Everybody's going to be presented with a situation from a loved one or a kid or a boss or something, somebody you have some kind of affinity or work relationship with, that's going to spike your limbic brain. It's going to spike your fight or flight impulse. And how do you fight that? How do you not live in fear all the time? I know I've worked with countless people. Amazingly enough, I ran a community bank. I know we've already talked about this. It still makes me laugh when I say that out loud. But countless people in this organization that were just ruled by fear. Everything was potential worst case scenario. And they were great at their job. They were just ruled by fear. And it wasn't astonishing that they were overweight, out of shape, had bunches of health problems, consistently in and out of the hospital. It's like, what, you're living in this heightened adrenaline cortisol level and just petrified constantly. It's astonishing.
And we'll talk more about that when we discuss the limbic brain activation in a next episode. So stay tuned for more on that. But for now, reality testing is one of the tools that you've got in your toolbox to use. And the more you use it, the more grounded you're going to feel and less worry you need to carry around with you.
So I don't want anybody to think while they're listening to this that we've got all this shit down. We're not perfect at this. So what kind of tactics do you employ personally to help with this in your life?
I use reality testing all the time. Now I don't have to try so hard to pause and do this very intentionally. It kind of just happens automatically so that I'm very discerning when somebody says something like, ran into a friend the other day and a mistake happened and a client was upset about it. You know, our gut reaction would immediately say, we're going to get fired. You know, we made a mistake. This is going to be a deal breaker. And you automatically go to the worst case scenario, right? When realistically, is that likely going to happen? No, probably not. If it happens, is it really the end of the world? If you lose a client over a mistake? No. So I use this all the time. I go through this exercise with clients very frequently because a lot of the times we don't even recognize that we're letting fear drive decisions for us. And so if I'm making a fear-based decision, that's when I'll really deploy the reality testing tool because I need to understand, okay, is this fear a grounded fear, a realistic fear, a likely fear? You know, and what kind of planning and prevention can I do, like, to make myself feel better about the risks I'm taking on?
Reality testing for me at the gym is, listen, man, I understand I'm not Evan T-Rex yet, like, yet. You know, my reality testing always uses that word, yet. Like, it is my reality right here. This is the realm I'm in. Awesome. I'm not here yet. Doesn't mean that I'm never going to make it. And doesn't mean that I'm not worth it, which would be the worst case scenario. I'm never going to be there. It's just part of this process. Relax, breathe. So we've covered a lot here of what our brain's going to naturally do. So what are the tactical steps for reality testing?
So the tactical steps to reality testing are thinking through worst case scenario, best case scenario, and most likely scenario. As silly as it sounds and as basic as it sounds, we never allow our brains to think about the best case scenario unless we are intentionally programming it to search for that information. So by intentionally searching for that information in our brain, we're forcing ourselves to become more objective or neutral in the situation and see things for how it really is versus what our brain is potentially making up and filling in gaps about.
So what are the benefits of reality testing, Kylie?
It gives you a clear picture of your current reality. It also helps you understand the difference between possibility and probability, like we talked about. Helps you stay calm and in control, right? We are in the composure domain, so this is a tool to help us maintain composure so that we're in control of how our body reacts to the unknown. Helps us then prioritize and plan, because then we're not spending our time or wasting our time on things that aren't even real. And then it helps you understand how to plan and prioritize according to what's real. Okay, so Chris, think of a real example, one that I can come up with. When Emma went to Boston, Emma is our 16-year-old, when she went to Boston on a field trip and would go out roaming the streets of Boston at night, and you said, hey, text me or FaceTime me when you get back to the hotel. And let's say she didn't. Where does your mind automatically go?
First off, I don't think she was roaming the streets of Boston. But
it sure sounded like it.
Yeah, I was concerned, right? I want an answer. I want an answer because she's so far away from me. And this is how I explained it. You're so far away from me, I can't help you. So at minimum, talk to me. You know, let me know you're safe. So I was not a aggressively adolescent child, but like I was so focused on having a good time with my friends that I wouldn't text my parents. And Emma and I are a lot alike, so I didn't get real bent out of shape.
I don't think they had cell phones back when you were a kid.
They didn't. We had the twisty thing that had to like wind up and then you could make a call on a radio. You
carry your cordless house phone around everywhere.
I did because it made me look cooler. No, So I thought, like, man, this would be really bad if something happened to her because I have no way to help this situation. And then you kind of feed into that. You feed this monster of bad potential issues quickly.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I kept envisioning, like, cold, dark alleys in the streets of Boston, and I was a little concerned.
Yeah. But then I asked myself, what is the probability of Emma getting hurt? That's pretty low.
She's a very good saleswoman, and I think she would talk a kidnapper out of taking her.
She's excellent. I worry about her boyfriends. I don't worry about her.
Yeah, no.
She's awesome.
Yeah.
But no, I get it. Like, that's normal. That's a phenomenal scenario because it's easy to see that the emotional connection sends you down this pathway that's just unrealistic immediately.
Yeah. So how did you talk yourself out of going down the slippery slope of, okay, she's going to end up murdered in a ditch?
Well, I remember the conversation we had before. She refused to wear a jacket because it didn't look cute.
Well, yeah, it's not part of the fit.
Fall in Boston. So first off, not going to be outside for very long. Second off, she's with a group of like 20 kids from her school that have four chaperones. So she would have to actively work to separate herself and then actively work to stay separated. And that's just not going to happen. Or the teachers, the four teachers, would have to neglect one of the 20. And they constantly had a text message feed going all the time. We're at the subway. We just made it in the subway. It's like 25 people from a small town just being enamored with Boston. They were constantly texting. So it's like, if I look at the whole situation, I've had multiple texts from Emma before she left, multiple texts from the teachers. If they go dark for a little bit, well, they might be in a play. They might be doing something that requires time or eating. They're not going to all be texting while they're eating. So just chill the hell out. We'll give it some time to play out. And if I'm concerned, there's four teachers and 20 kids I can figure out a way to reach out to figure out where she is.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect example of you understanding and sorting through possibility and probability and then going to, all right, how likely is the worst case scenario? Not likely. We've got all of these precautions in place. It's been properly planned. Lots of supervision, right? You're taking in all the information and objectively assessing whether or not that's a likely scenario. And your brain says, nope, it's not really a likely scenario. So I'm gonna give this some peace of mind and allow myself to just stay neutral.
Well, stay neutral until it's needed to not be neutral anymore.
Yeah, until you get a message that says, hey, we can't find Emma.
Yeah, then it's time to drive to Boston. Like, then things change. But until things change, me fretting about it and freaking out and blowing up her phone is not going to change anything. It's just going to waste a lot of energy and send me into space for absolutely no reason.
And I'll give another example because this also happened. I think you got a text message from your mom maybe saying Audrey's in the hospital. With like no explanation of what happened, and she had fainted because she locked out her knees while singing in choir.
Oh yeah, passed out.
Yeah, passed out, and now you have no context around what's going on. Your immediate gut reaction was, I gotta drive down there, because you're waiting on clarification to come through and tell you, no, she's fine. She maybe has a concussion because she hit her head, but like nothing serious, right?
Well, I've always been into the frame of reference, like if it's going to be super bad, there's no way my phone would be quiet right now.
Yeah.
You know, there's too many people involved in that scenario for them to be like, oh, Audrey just broke her back and then we're just don't call her dad. You know, that's not going to happen.
Right.
So if my mom texts me, she's a nurse, a retired nurse, but she texts me and says, Audrey's in the hospital. I have to understand how my mother text messages and communicates. And that has to play into the scenario. It's like when your dad texts you, you know, I created a video for you for your birthday and had everybody give like a minute segment of what they, how much they loved you. Your dad was like 30 seconds and like a joke, and it was hilarious, but that's the way he communicates.
Yeah.
So you have to take into account communication styles when they're trying to tell you something. My mother saw it not as something that was worth losing her mind over. So it was, hey, Audrey's in the hospital. It's like, okay, well, clearly she's not dying because you would have told me.
Yeah. It would have been a more frantic message.
And I was upset. I mean, don't get me wrong. I was concerned. But then my dad calls me right after and he's like, yeah, she just passed out. I'm like, okay, there you go. No reason to throw a fit.
But you were panicked for a minute.
Well, yeah. Yeah. It's like, it's not that I don't get excited. It's, I'm not going to go to the point of losing my mind because one, it's not productive. And two, it doesn't allow me to process information at any level. So if I go to the point that it's time to physically make an action happen, that's all I can channel my energy into. So if Audrey's hurt and I need to leave, I'm leaving right now. And that's all I have process ability for. Mm-hmm. But if she's just in the hospital, let me figure out all the information before I become very singular in my actions.
Yeah.
You know?
Thanks for listening to Redefining Resilience.
To learn more about building your mental and physical readiness, check out odysseyresilience.org.
And follow us on Instagram, LinkedIn, and TikTok.